Was she still doggedly turning out pancakes? You should. We're full of energy and mischief. Alice doesn't bother to answer. Taking the boxes, Jace begins piling them on the table, batting away his younger sibling's questing hands. Wait till I get plates, guys. Jeez. How was the take at the end of the day?
Actually, surprisingly good.
Tim hauls a wad of paper napkins out of his pocket and fans them out on the table.
We sold a wood chipper, that freaking big one in the back that was taking up all the space. No way.
Jace pulls a gallon of milk out of the fridge, carefully distributing it into paper cups.
$2,000 way.
Tim flips slices of pizza onto plates, shoving them in front of Duff, Harry, Andy, George, and the still-scowling Joel.
Hey, kid. Good to see you here.
Tim smiles at me.
Back where you belong and all that crap.
Mines,
Patsy shouts, pointing at Tim. He goes to her, rumples her scanty hair.
See, hot Alice? Even the very young feel the pull of my magnetism. It's like an irresistible urge, a force like gravity or...
poop!
Or that.
Tim removes Patsy's hand, which is now tugging up his shirt. Poor girl. She really hates drinking from bottles. He grins at Alice.
So hot, Alice. What do you think? How about putting on that uniform and checking my reflexes? Stop putting the moves on my sister in our kitchen, Tim. Jesus. Just so you know, Alice's nurse's uniform is a pair of green scrubs. She looks like Gumby,
Jace says, returning the gallon of milk to the fridge.
I'm starving, but I don't want pizza,
Duff says heavily.
That's all we ever eat anymore. I'm sick of pizza and Cheerios, and those used to be my two favorite things on the planet. I used to think it would be fun to watch TV all the time,
Harry says.
But it's not. It's boring.
I stayed up until 3 last night watching Jake Gyllenhaal movies, even the R-rated ones,
Andy offers.
Nobody even noticed or told me to go to bed.
Are we all sharing grievances now?
Joel says.
Should I get out the talking stick? Well, actually,
Jace begins, and then there's a knock on the door. Joel, did you order out even though you knew I was making pancakes? Alice asks angrily. Joel raises his hands in self-defense.
God knows I wanted to, but I hadn't gotten around to it, I swear.
The knock sounds again, and Duff opens the screen door to let in. My mother...
I wondered if my daughter was here.
Her gaze drifts over everyone at the table. Patsy, with her hair smeared with butter, syrup, and tomato sauce. George, without his shirt, little rivulets of syrup edging down his chest. Harry lunging for more pizza. Duff at his most truculent, the teary Andy. Jace, who freezes in his tracks.
Hi, Mom.
Her eyes settle on me.
I thought I'd find you here. Hi, sweetheart.
Yo, Gracie.
Tim drags an armchair from the living room to the kitchen island.
Take a load off. Let your hair down. Have a slice.
He cuts a glance at my face, then Jace's, eyebrows lifting. Jace is still staring at Mom, that confused look he had in her office returning. My mother regards the boxes of pizza as though they are alien artifacts from Roswell, New Mexico. Her preferred pizza toppings, I know, are pesto, artichoke hearts, and shrimp. Nonetheless, she sinks into the chair.
Thank you.
I look at her. This is neither the broken woman in the silk robe, nor the brittle hostess offering Jace a beer. There's something in her face I haven't seen before. I glance over to find Jace still studying her too, his expression impassive.
So you're Sailor Supergirl's mommy.
George struggles to talk around a mouthful of pizza.
We never saw you up close before, only on TV.
My mother gives him a tiny smile.
What's your name?
I rush through introductions. She looks so stiff and uncomfortable, immaculate and out of place in the comfortable chaos of this kitchen.
Should we go home, Mom?
She shakes her head.
No, I'd like to meet Jace's family. Goodness, is this all of you?
Except my daddy, 'cause he's in the hostable,
George says chattily,
getting up from the table and circling over to Mom. And Mommy, because she's taking a nap. And our new baby, because he's in Mommy's belly drinking her blood. Mom pales. Rolling her eyes, Alice says, George, that's not how it works. I explained when you asked how the new baby ate. Nutrients go through the umbilical cord, along with Mom's blood, so...
I know how the baby got in there, announces Harry. Someone told me it's sailing camp. See, the dad puts...
Okay, guys, enough, Jace interrupts. Settle down. He looks over at Mom again, drumming his index finger on the countertop. Silence. A little awkward, not to mention unusual. George, Harry, Duff, and Andy are busy eating. Joel has unzipped the cash register bag and is sorting through the bills, separating by denomination. Tim's opened one of the cartons of ice cream and is eating directly out of it, which gets Alice's attention. Do you have any idea how unsanitary that is? He drops the spoon guiltily.
Sorry, I didn't think. I just needed sugar. All I do these days is eat sweet. I may be sober and not smoking much, but morbid obesity is my future.
Alice actually smiles at him. That's part of the withdrawal process, Tim. Completely normal. Just get yourself a bowl, okay? Tim grins back at her, and there's this funny stillness there before Alice turns away, reaching into a drawer. Here.
I want ice cream! I want ice cream!
George bangs his own spoon on the table. Patsy, getting into the spirit, whacks her high chair with her hands.
Boob! She yells. Poop!
Mom frowns. Her first words, I explain hastily. Then shame prickles my face. Why do I feel as though I have to explain away Patsy? Ah. Jace meets my eyes. His are stormy with bafflement and pain so intense it hits me like a slap. What is she doing here now? Jace and I were fine. We were connected. And here she is. Why? He jerks his head toward the door.
We better get some more ice cream from the freezer in the garage. Come on, Sam.
There are two full cartons on the table. Alice looks down at them, then at Jace. But, she starts. He shakes his head at her.
Sam?
I follow him out. I can see a muscle jump in his jawline, feel the tension in the set of his shoulders, as though they are part of my own body. As soon as we've cleared the steps, he wheels on me.
What is this? Why is she here?
I stumble back. I don't know, I say. My mom's acting so normal, so calm, the friendly neighbor dropping by. But nothing is normal. How can she be calm?
Is this more of Clay's bullshit? Jace demands. Is he having her come over here and act all nicey-nice before everyone else finds out?
My eyes prickle, tears so close. I don't know, I say again.
Like maybe my family will think this sweet lady could never do something so bad, and I've just lost it or something, and...
I grab his hand. I don't know, I whisper. Could this be yet another part of Clay's game? Of course it could. I've been thinking somehow that Mom was making a gesture in there, a peace offering. But maybe it is just another political tactic. My stomach coils. I don't know what to think. I don't know what to feel. The tears I've been fending off spill over. I scrub at my cheeks angrily.
I'm sorry, Jace says, pulling me to him so my cheek rests against his chest. Of course you don't. I just... Seeing her sitting there in the kitchen, eating pizza, as if everything's all great, it makes me...
Sick, I finish for him, shutting my eyes.
For you too, not just Dad. For you too, Sam.
I want to argue, repeat again that she's not a bad person. But if she really has come over here at Clay's bidding to show the softer side of grace, then...
Got that ice cream? Alice calls out the door. I didn't think it was possible, but we'll actually be needing it.
Just a sec, Jace calls back, hastily lifting the garage door. He reaches into the garret's freezer case, always loaded from Costco, and takes out a carton.
Let's get back in before they eat the bowls.
He tries for his old, easy smile. Falls short. When we return to the kitchen, George is saying to Mom,
I like this cereal called Gorilla Munch on top of my ice cream. It's not really made of gorillas.
Oh, well, good.
It's really just peanut butter and healthy stuff.
George searches around in the box, tipping it, then heaps cereal into his bowl.
But if you buy boxes of cereal, you can save gorillas. And that's really good, because otherwise they can get instinct.
My mother looks at me for translation, or maybe salvation. Extinct, I supply.
That's what I meant.
George pours milk on top of his cereal and ice cream, then stirs it vigorously.
That means they don't mate enough, and then they're dead forever.
Silence falls again. Heavy silence. Dead forever. That phrase seems to reverberate in the air, at least for me. Mr. Garrett lying face down in the rain, that image Jace added to the echo of that sickening thud. Does Mom see it too? She puts down her slice of pizza, her fingers tight on a paper towel as she dabs at her lips. Jace is staring at the floor. My mother stands up so abruptly that her chair almost overturns.
Samantha, will you come outside with me for a moment?
Dread snags at me. She's going to march me home to face Clay's arm-twisting again. Please, no. I glance at Jace. Mom bends over the table so she's eye-to-eye with George.
I'm sorry about your father, she tells him. I hope he feels better soon.
Then she rushes out the door, sure I'll trail after her, even after everything. Go, Jace mouths at me, lifting his chin toward the door. A look at those eyes and it's clear. He has to know everything. I hurry after my mom as her sandals click down the driveway. She stills, then turns slowly. It's almost fully dark now, the street lamp casting a shallow puddle of light on the driveway. Mom? I search her face.
Those children?
What about them?
I couldn't stay any longer.
The words drag slowly out, then, in a rush.
Do you know Mr. Garrett's room number? He's at Maplewood Memorial, yes?
Melodramatic scenarios crowd my mind. Clay will go there and put a pillow over Mr. Garrett's face, an air bubble in his IV. Mom will. I no longer have any grasp of what she'll do. Could she really come over and eat pizza, and then do something terrible? But she already has done something terrible, and then showed up with figurative lasagna. Here I am, your good neighbor.
Why?
I ask.
I need to tell him what happened.
What I did. She compresses her lips, her gaze drawn back to the Garrett's house, the light a perfect square in the screen door.
Oh, thank God.
Right now? You're going to tell the truth?
Everything, she replies, in a small, soft voice.
She reaches into her purse, taking out a pen and her tiny flag this notebook.
What's his room number?
He's in the ICU, Mom. My voice is sharp. How can she not remember?
You can't talk to him. They won't let you. You're not family.
She looks at me, blinks.
I'm your mother.
I stare at her completely confused, but then I realize. She thinks I meant she wasn't my family. At the moment, it feels true, and I suddenly know I'm standing somewhere very far away from her. All my strength, all my will, is diverted into defending this family. My mom, what she's done, I can't defend her. They won't let you into the room, is all I say. Only his immediate relatives. Her face twists, and with a jerk of my stomach, I interpret her expression. Some shame, mainly relief. She won't have to face him. My eyes fall on the van, the driver's side door. I know who deserves the truth just as badly as Mr. Garrett, though. Mom's hand moves convulsively to smooth the skirt of her dress. You need to talk to Mrs. Garrett, I say. Tell her. She's home. You can do it now. Again, that snap of a gaze at the door, then a sharp turn of her head, as though the whole house is the scene of the accident. I can't go in there again. Mom's hand is rigid in mine as I pull at her, trying to urge her back up the driveway. Her palm is damp.
Not with all those children.
You have to.
I can't.
My eyes draw back to the door, too, as though I'll find the solution waiting there. And I do. Jace, with Mrs. Garrett standing next to him. His shoulders are set, his arm tight around her. The screen door opens and they come out.
Senator Reed, I told my mom you had something to say.
Mom nods, her throat working. Mrs. Garrett is barefoot, her hair sleep-rumpled, her face tired but composed. Jace can't have told her.
Yes, I need to speak with you, Mom says, in private. Would you care to come have some lemonade at my house?
She dabs at her upper lip with one knuckle, adding,
It's very humid tonight.
You can talk here.
Jace obviously doesn't want his mother within range of Clay's hypnotism. She raises her eyebrows at his tone.
You're more than welcome to come inside, Senator.
Mrs. Garrett's own voice is soothing and polite.
It will be just the two of us, Mom assures Jace. I'm sure my other company has left.
Right here will be fine, he repeats. Sam and I will keep the kids occupied inside.
Jace,
Mrs. Garrett begins, her cheeks flushing at her unaccountably rude child.
That's fine.
Mom takes a deep breath. Jace opens the screen door, motioning me back in. I stand for a moment, looking from my mom to Mrs. Garrett and back again. Everything about the two women profiled in the driveway is poles apart. Mom's sunny yellow sheath, her pedicured feet, Mrs. Garrett's rumpled sundress and unpolished toenails. Mom's taller, Mrs. Garrett younger. But the pucker between each of their brows is nearly identical. The apprehension washing over their faces, equal. Chapter 51. I don't know how my mother said it, if the truth gushed or seeped from her lips. Neither Jace nor I could hear above the clatter of the kitchen, only see their silhouettes in the deepening darkness when we had a moment to steal a look as we cleaned up pizza boxes, shooed the kids into bath or bed, or toward the hypnotic mumble of the television. What I know is that after about 20 minutes, Mrs. Garrett opened the screen door of the kitchen, her face giving nothing away. She told Alice and Joel she was headed to the hospital and needed them to come with her, then turned to Jace.
You'll come too?
When they've gone, and Andy, obviously still suffering from the after effects of her Jake Gyllenhaal marathon, falls asleep on the couch, I hear a voice call from the back porch.
Kid?
I peer out the screen at the ember glow from Tim's cigarette.
Come on out. I don't want to smoke indoors in case George wakes up, but I'm chaining. I can't stop.
I step out, surprised by how fresh the air smells, the leaves of the trees shifting against the darkened sky. I feel as though I've been locked in stale rooms, unable to breathe for hours, days, eons. Even at McGuire Park, I couldn't take a deep breath, not with knowing what I had to say to Jace.
Want one?
Tim asks.
You look like you're gonna puke.
He offers me the crumpled pack of Marlboros. I have to laugh. I definitely would if I did. Too late for you to corrupt me, Tim. Corrupt comes back to slap me. The Garretts know now. Have they called the police? The press? Where's Mom?
So?
Tim flicks the lighter open, crushing the previous butt under his flip-flops.
The truth is out there, huh?
I thought you'd gone home.
I booked it outside when you and Grace left. Thought Jace was going to spill it all, and it was a family time and all that shit.
Yes, a nice little family gathering. But I didn't want to go home in case, you know, somebody needed me for something. A ride, a punching bag, sexual favors.
I must make a face because he bursts out laughing.
Alice, not you. Babysitting, whatever, any of my many talents.
I'm touched. No Nan, but here is Tim, and after so much time away. He seems to interpret my feelings because he rushes to continue.
The sexual favor part is purely self-interest. Also, I fucking hate going to my house, so there's that. Where's Gracie?
Being read her rights? My eyes fill. I hate this.
Hell, not this again. Stop it!
Tim waves his hand at my face frantically, as if he can shoo the emotions away like flies.
Did she go to the hospital to fess up?
I explain about the ICU. He whistles.
I forgot about that. Well, is she home?
When I tell him I have no idea, he drops the cigarette to the ground, mashes it, sets his hands on my shoulders, and turns me toward my own yard.
Go find out. I'll man the fort here.
I walk down the Garrett's driveway. Mom isn't answering her cell. Maybe it's been confiscated by the police, who have already patted her down and fingerprinted her. It's 10 o'clock. The Garrett's left here over an hour ago. There are no lights on at our house, no sign of Mom's car, but that could be in the garage. I climb the porch steps, planning to go through the side door and check for it, when I find her. She's sitting on the wrought iron bench by the front door, the one she bought to reinforce the fact that we should sit there and take our shoes or boots off outdoors. She's wrapped her arms around her bent knees. "Hi," she says, in a quiet, listless voice. Reaching beside herself, she picks something up. A glass of white wine. Looking at it, I feel sick again. She's sitting on the steps with Chardonnay? Where's Clay? Heating up the focaccia? When I ask, she shrugs. Oh, I imagine he's halfway back to his summer house by now. I remember her saying that if I told, she'd lose him, too. Clay plays for the winning team. Mom takes another sip, swirls the glass, looking into it. So, did you guys break up? She sighs. Not in so many words. What does that even mean? He's not very happy with me, though he's probably coming up with a good resignation from the race speech. Clay does thrive on a challenge. So you kicked him out? Or he left, or what? I want to pull the glass out of her hand and toss it off the porch. I told him the Garretts deserved the truth. He said truth was a flexible thing. We had words. I said I was going over to talk to you and the Garretts. He gave me an ultimatum. I left anyway. When I came back, he was gone. He did text me, though. She reaches into the pocket of her dress, pulling out her phone as if it's proof. I can't read the screen, but Mom continues anyway. Said he was still friends with all his old girlfriends. She makes a face. I think he meant previous girlfriends since I was probably the oldest. Said he didn't believe in burning bridges, but it might be good if we took a little time to reassess our position. Damn, Clay. So he's not going to work with you anymore? He has a friend on the Christopher campaign, Marcy, who says they could use his skills. I bet. But Ben Christopher's a Democrat. Well, yes, Mom says. I mentioned the same thing in my little text back. Clay just said, it's politics, sugar. It's not personal. Her tone's resigned. What changed? I point at the bay windows of her office, curving gracefully out the side of our house. In there, you and Clay were on the same page. Mom licks her lips. I don't know, Samantha. I kept thinking of his speech about how I'd done it for you. To protect you and that Garrett boy. She reaches out, sliding her palms down either side of my face, looking me in the eye, finally. The thing is, you were the very last thing on my mind. When I thought of you... She rubs the bridge of her nose.
All I thought was that if you hadn't been there, no one would know.
Before I can respond or even let that sink in, she holds up a hand.
I know. You don't have to say anything. What kind of mother thinks that? I'm not a good mother. That's what I realized. Or a strong woman.
My stomach hurts. Though I've thought this myself, though I've just recently said it aloud to Jace, I feel sad and guilty.
You told now, Mom. That's strong. That's good.
She shrugs, brushing off the sympathy.
When I first met Clay this spring, I stalled on mentioning I had teenagers. The truth was just inconvenient, that I was in my 40s with nearly grown daughters.
She gives a little rueful laugh.
It seemed like a big issue then.
Does Tracy know?
She'll be home tomorrow morning. I called her after I got home.
I try to picture Tracy's reaction. My sister, the future lawyer. Horrified at Mom? Devastated at having her summer interrupted? Or something else entirely? Something I can't even picture. Oh, Trace, I've missed her so much.
What did Mrs. Garrett say? What happens now?
She takes another big sip of wine. Not reassuring.
I don't want to think about that, she says. We'll know soon enough.
She straightens her legs, stands up.
It's late. You should be in bed.
Her motherly, admonishing tone. After all this, it seems ridiculous. But when I see the slump of her shoulders as she reaches for the doorknob, I can only tell her another truth, however inconvenient.
I love you, Mom.
She inclines her head, acknowledging, then ushers me into the chill of the central air. Turning to lock the door firmly behind her, she sighs.
I just knew it.
Knew what? I ask, turning.
Knew no good would come of getting to know those people next door.
Chapter 52. Contrary to Clay's predictions, the Garretts don't call a press conference the next day, or go directly to the police. They do, after all, bring out the talking stick. There's a family conference at the hospital, with all the children down to Duff. Alice and Joel want to report Mom immediately. Andy and Jace argue against it. Ultimately, Mr. and Mrs. Garrett decide to keep the matter private. Mom had offered to cover all the medical bills and the additional expenses of hiring someone to work at the store, Jace tells me, and his parents struggle with that. Mr. Garrett doesn't want charity or hush money. For a week, they discuss it as a family. Mr. Garrett is moved from the ICU, and Mom goes to visit. Even Jace doesn't know what passes between them, but the next day, Mom resigns from the race. Just as she said he would, Clay writes the speech for her.
Certain events in my family have convinced me that I must decline the honor of running for office once again, in the hope of serving as your senator. Public servants are also private individuals, and as such I must do the right thing for the people closest to home before I try to serve the wider world.
There's a lot of lurid speculation in the press. I guess there always is when a politician resigns unexpectedly, but it dies down after a few weeks. I expect her to take a cruise, that trip to Virgin Gorda, escape. But instead, she spends a lot of time at our house, fixing up the garden she used to care about before she got so busy in politics. She makes dinner for the Garretts and hands it to me to bring over, until Duff gets as sick of sun-dried tomatoes, goat cheese, and puff pastry as he'd ever been of pizza. She asks me how Mr. Garrett is doing, averting her eyes. When Jace offers to mow our lawn, she tells me to thank him, but we have a service. You'd think after all the years I've come to the B&T, all the Friday night hornpipe dinners, the holiday festivities, the hours logged in and by the pools, that I would have missed it more since I hung up my uniform and said goodbye to Mr. Lennox. But though Mom decides it's the only possible place to go for a last family dinner before Tracy leaves for college, I don't feel a rush of nostalgia as we open the heavy oak doors to the dining room, just surprise that it's all exactly the same. The soft classical music played low enough to be nearly subliminal, the loud laughter from the bar, the chink of silverware, the smell of lemon oil and overstarched tablecloths and prime rib. Tracy is leading the way, which is different. Mom follows. We get our usual maitre d', but he doesn't take us to the table that's always been ours, below the sea of harpooned whales and unlucky sailors. Instead, he leads us to a smaller corner table.
"I'm very sorry," he tells Mom. "You haven't been here in a while, and we've become accustomed to giving this table to Mr. Lamont. He comes in every Friday."
Mom looks down at her hands, then abruptly back at him. "Of course, naturally. This is fine, better, more privacy." She sinks into the chair that doesn't face the rest of the room, shaking out her napkin.
"We were very sorry to hear that you won't be representing us again, Senator Reed,"
he says gently.
"Ah, well, time to move on."
Mom reaches for the bread basket and butters a roll with enormous concentration. Then she eats it as though it's her last meal. Tracy raises her eyebrows at me. We do a lot of that these days. Our house is a quiet minefield. Tracy can't wait to escape to Middlebury, and I can't blame her.
"Speaking of which," Tracy says, "I'm changing up some college plans."
Mom puts down the last bite of her roll.
"No,"
she says faintly. Tracy just looks at her, like Mom has lost her right to say no or yes to anything, which has pretty much been her stance since she returned from the vineyard. And Mom looks away.
"Flip's transferring up to Vermont to be with me. He's got a great job as a manny for some professors in the English department. We're going to get an apartment together."
Mom doesn't seem to know where to start with this. Finally, she says,
"A manny?"
"That's right, Mom." Tracy closes her menu.
"And an apartment together."
At first glance, you could mistake this for their old battle, Tracy reserving her right to rebel and Mom refusing to let her. But these days, my mother always blinks first. She looks down at the napkin in her lap now, takes a careful sip of water, then says,
"Oh, well,
that is news." Pause while the waiter takes our orders. We are still too well-bred or well-trained to show visible emotion in front of the waitstaff. When he departs, though, Mom reaches for the silk cardigan sweater she's draped over the back of her seat, fumbling in the pocket.
"I guess, then, it's a good time to show you this."
She carefully unfolds a sheet of paper, smooths it with her hand, and positions it between Tracy and me. "For sale, your house of dreams. Nestled on a quiet cul-de-sac in one of Connecticut's most exclusive towns, this jewel of a home features the best of everything, top-of-the-line amenities, prime location near the boardwalk and beach, hardwood floors, everything of the highest quality. For price, please inquire of Postscript Realty." I'm staring, not really getting it, but Tracy does immediately.
"You're selling our house? We're moving?"
"Samantha and I will be moving. You will already be gone," Mom says, with a ghost of her old sharp tone. It's only then that I actually recognize our house in the picture, caught from a slant, a view I rarely see anymore, the opposite side from the garrets.
"It makes sense," Mom says briskly, as the waiter soundlessly slides her plate of field greens in front of her. "Too much house for two people. Too much."
Her voice fades and she stabs at a piece of dried cranberry.
"They give it a month to sell, tops," she says. "A month?" Tracy explodes. "In Samantha's last year of high school? Where are you going to go?"
Mom finishes chewing her forkful of salad, dabs at her lips.
"Oh, maybe those new condominiums over by the inlet. Just until we get our bearings. It won't change anything for Samantha. She'll still go to Hodges."
"Right," Tracy mutters.
"God, Mom, hasn't enough changed for Samantha already?"
I don't say anything, but in a way, Tracy's right. Who was that girl who trailed in here at the beginning of the summer, with Nan, her best friend, fretting about Tim, baffled by Clay, keeping secret her crush? But then, that's exactly it, isn't it?
Everything big has already changed. Our house was Mom's work of art, her testament to the fact that she deserved the best of everything. But what I loved was the view. And for so long, that was who I was, the girl who watched the Garretts, my life next door. But I'm not that watcher anymore. What Jace and I have is real and alive. It has nothing to do with how things look from far away, and everything to do with how they are up close. That won't change. Chapter 53. Now it's early dawn, Labor Day weekend. School starts tomorrow with its cavalcade of homework and AP classes and expectations. When I open my eyes, I can already feel the change. The lazy air deepened now, New England's summer days yielding to the crispness of fall. I bike to the ocean for a pre-dawn swim, focusing on my strokes, then floating in the waves, looking up at the stars fading in the sky. I will make swim team this fall. I'm back home before the sun is fully risen and just out of the shower when I hear him.
Samantha! Sam!
I rub my towel over my hair and walk to the window. It's still dark but lightening up enough that I can see Jace standing below by the trellis, something in his hand.
Step aside for a sec, he calls up to me.
When I do, a newspaper swings up and in the window, in a perfect arc. I pop my head back out. What an arm! But I don't subscribe to the Stony Bay Bugle.
Look inside.
Snapping off the rubber band, I unroll the paper. Inside is a perfect puff of Queen Anne's lace, fragile and blooming around a center as green as spring, with a note around the stem. Come next door. Your chariot awaits. I climb down the trellis. There in the Garretts' driveway is the Mustang, the shredded seats replaced by smooth brown leather, the front part painted a dazzling racing green. She's beautiful, I say.
I wanted to wait till it was perfect. New paint job everywhere. Then I realized perfect could be too long.
No dancing hula girls yet, I note.
If you feel like dancing or doing the hula, be my guest. Although the front seat is kind of cramped, you might have to go for the hood.
I laugh. And scratch that paint job? No way.
Come on.
He opens the side door with a flourish, ushering me in, then jumps in himself, vaulting easily over the driver's side door. Suave, I say, laughing.
Right, huh? I practiced. Key to avoiding landing on the stick shift.
I'm still laughing as he turns the key in the ignition, and the car roars to life. She runs!
Of course, Jace says smugly. Buckle up. I've got something else to show you.
The town is still and quiet as we ride through the streets. Too early for stores to open, too early for Breakfast Ahoy to unfurl its awning. But the paper boys have already done their job. We drive down the long shore road and wind up in the beach parking lot near the clam shack where we had our first date.
Come on, Sam.
I take Jace's hand and we walk on the beach. The sand is cool, firm, and damp from the receding tide, but there is that shimmer of heat in the air that tells you it's going to be a scorching day. We walk out on the rocky path to the lighthouse. It's still fairly dark, and Jace holds a steadying hand to my waist as we clamber over the huge, crooked stones. When we get to the lighthouse, he pulls me toward the black enameled pipes that form the ladder that takes you to the roof.
You first, he says. I'm right behind you.
At the top, we duck into the room where the huge light faces the ocean, then climb out on the gently slanted roof. Jace looks at his watch.
In 10, 9, 8.
Is something going to blow up? I ask.
Shh. Perks of being a paperboy. I know exactly when this happens. Shh, Samantha. Watch.
We lie back, hand in hand, look out over the ocean, and watch the sunrise over the roof of the world. This concludes My Life Next Door. Please visit our website, www.tantor.com,
For more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers, or call toll-free 877-7-TANTOR to request a catalog.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.